This is Edge Cases. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Wolf French.
And what's our topic this week, Wolf?
Threading.
Oh, man. If you told me that ahead of time, I totally missed that joke. Because if you'd been like threading and I said like threading at the same time, but a little off, that would have been good.
Precisely.
So, you know, we miss those kind of jokes when we keep our topics as a surprise.
It's just our Apple heritage, right? We're intensely secretive
That's
for no
true.
Reason. Yeah.
That's right. So the press will you know, publicize our topics.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's right. Where we'll be on the cover of Time. Alrighty, so I don't think we're doing any feedback FU follow-up this time around, right?
Yeah, I do have some follow-up I need to get to, but unfortunately all my time has disappeared, so I'm just going to have to punt it.
Indeed. All right, so take it away.
Okay, so really this talk is kind of a subset of a larger talk, which is basically the many forms of parallelism in software and hardware. But usually when you talk about parallelism, like the first thing that comes into most programmers' minds are threads. And turns out I have a lot to say about threads. So I'll just kind of use this as the episode talking about threads. We can kind of refer back to it.
Before we start?
Yeah.
Parallelism?
Parallelism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Am I saying it wrong?
You were kind of slurring, I think, on the R.
Oh, okay.
Parallelism.
That's probably this. Man, I wish I could blame the bourbon, but I haven't had any yet, so.
Maybe more would help.
So the threads, as you alluded to in the intro, pretty much have a bad reputation. And pragmatically, rightfully so. But there's... Threads are interesting because there's things that are good about them, there are things that are bad about them, and there are things that we think are bad about them that aren't, and it's just kind of an artifact of the tooling and the technology. And it's like before we had leprosy treatments, you know, leper colonies were a good idea. So it's like, you know, the technology has gotten better, and now we don't even need the leper colonies anymore.
Jeez, threads is leprosy is threads, or threads is leprosy? I don't know about that.
Something like that. As I always strain for analogies. Not really. It's come to me, which is unfortunate. I'll define my terms. So thread is pretty simple in concept. At the machine level, it's essentially a set of registers and a stack. And a stack is a chunk of memory that you can use a plain old malloc to allocate, but they're pretty lightweight. So you end up having in things that keep kind of control track of these threads are basically the term is a structure. It tends to be like a C structure, data structure, but they tend to call these types of things control blocks, which because it's a block of relay data. So. And so these structures would have like the list of registers and probably a pointer to the stack that the thread is using for its for things on the stack. And then the thread control blocks tend to be in linked lists or something like that. So they have previous and next pointers to all the threads that the process knows about. And so you have a list of threads and these thread control blocks. And then you have like bits on them, like whether they're active or inactive, whether they're waiting on some semaphore or something like that. So that type of stuff. And then the scheduler is what's responsible for actually kind of going through the list and trying to decide what gets run when. And there's two basic types of threading kind of execution model. And that's cooperative threading and there is preemptive threading. And... do you ever do any work with the thread manager, Andrew?
You mean like creating my own threads, that sort of thing,
yeah.
Handling the threads directly?
Uh-huh.
I think I've done a little bit, but it's all prehistory at this point.
Sure. Yeah, that's cooperative multi-threading is where every thread has to explicitly yield to the next. So in it's pretty outmoded nowadays, or at least unfashionable, that the idea that you actually would have to call, like in the thread manager of in Carbon, there's actually a call called yield to any thread or yield to thread, where you pass in what specific thread you want to yield to. And at that point, the thread manager would kick in, would take the current set of registers, save them into your thread control block, and then load up the registers from the previous from whatever thread needs to be executed next, and put them back in the registers and jump to where the thread left off. So it was totally deterministic when your thread would be done, and you didn't really have to worry about like other threads jumping in at any given time. And so right there is like, I think it's important to call out that a lot of the problems that people associate with threading have to do with preemptive multi-threading instead of the cooperative stuff. With the preemptive, get a little bit into this later, but even things like simple addition with shared variables across threads like can be non-deterministic whether simple addition succeeds. So if simple addition is unpredictable, then you don't have a really fighting chance at all to make your program work correctly. But with cooperative multi-threading, it's all very predictable and has a bunch of benefits, which I'll talk a little bit about later. But this is when Apple was shopping around for its next operating system, which ended up being basically Next with all the mock stuff underneath it. The two main things that Apple didn't have in the classic Mac OS that they wanted was preemptive multitasking and protected memory. So those were the kind of the big boy operating system concepts that the classic Mac didn't have. Well, it turns out it actually did have preemptive multi-thread. What really the real stumbling block for the classic Mac OS was that the memory manager was not reentrant and wasn't protected. So it was, I mean, from the days of yore, I mean, from the original Mac 120K, there are things called like a VBL task or a vertical blanking task, which would be called, I think it's like 60 times a second around that. And this was interrupt. It is an interrupt task that got called, and you could run code, and people did and have integrated and very effective kind of a preemptive multitasking system that fired all the time. And so even if you held down the menu bar and you had the menu open, that all your tasks would continue to fire. But the thing that really kind of put a wrench in the works, monkey wrench in the works, which I guess that's kind of disparaging to me, but oh well, was the since the memory manager wasn't reentrant or protected in any way, we also had this problem where we dealt with the double indirection of handles. And this is because it kind of was a fallout from the Mac not having virtual memory initially. Virtual memory was optional until, I forget, like System 7, I think. And it was optional for a very long time. And without the virtual memory hardware, like the way to deal with memory management was these handles that could be purged and moved around on you and compacted and stuff like that. It's actually a pretty good system for what it was. And of course, with hardware acceleration of real MMUs, memory management units on processors, it has fallen by the wayside. But the main problem was that the memory manager, if you had these handles to blocks, and these blocks could move around on you, and at any given time, the memory manager might be in the middle of copying a block from one area of memory to the next to try and compact memory and try to optimize your memory usage so you could squeeze every last byte out of your 8 megs of RAM. And so your interrupts would fire, and you'd be like, oh, crap, you have all these handles, and are they in the middle of being copied? Have they been copied successfully? This wasn't designed for this at all. So that was really the limiting factor. Later on, Apple introduced the multiprocessing API for the Power Macs, and that also had a bunch of abilities to run tasks on multiple processors and stuff like that. And again, really, the limiting factor was the memory manager. And you basically had to know that you were dealing with things in pointers that weren't moving around on you, which was comparatively rare because the Mac used handles for everything. So that's, so that was the limiting factor. So when I talk about preemptive multitasking, it's interesting because you can actually have preemptive multitasking even on a machine that only has one processor or one core. And how it achieves that is that it cheats in that it can't really do more than one thing at the same time, but what it can do is switch tasks pretty rapidly. So as it has a timer chip that pulls a pin on the side, virtually, of course, metaphorically, I should say. It pulls a pin on the side of the processor. Processor takes an interrupt and looks at what it's doing, tries to figure out whether it should be doing it. If it still says, okay, I should be doing this, it just continues on. When it is, or if it's decided, this has gone on long enough, which is something I say to myself often, it will suspend the current process, current thread, which is the simple matter of taking the registers, copying them into the thread control block, figuring out what's the next thread to execute, and pulling those registers, those stored registers, out of the control block and putting them back into registers, and going on this long merry way. This is the difference between parallelism and concurrency. By the way, parallelism is where software can do more than one thing at a time. So you can have a multi-threaded piece of software. But this multi-threaded piece of software, if you run it on a unit processor software, it's just going to simulate running things concurrently. It actually can't. So it's not actually concurrent. Software is still parallel, but it's not concurrent. Whereas if you actually have multiple hardware, like a symmetric multi-processing box or a multi-core, then you can actually execute multiple. You can take your parallel software and run it concurrently. So, and then there's things like hyperthreading, which is unfortunately it's a confusing name because it has the word threading right in its name, and how it presents itself to the operating system is these logical cores, and I'm not going to talk about that too much, but you should know that it has much more to do with processor instruction level parallelism than it has to do with threads as most programmers deal with them. So this, I think I'll save that for our next talk on parallelism. So nowadays we have Mach underneath, and Mach is a modern stealthy operating system. So it has all sorts of thread support. In fact, back when I read the Tannenbaum book on Mach, which I should make a note to myself to link to that, if I haven't already done so. I think I have. I remember thinking, that Mach had such a clean model in terms of how it divvied up processes and threads. Kind of once you saw the Mach model, like, it was hard to think that it could be structured any other way. That Mach managed processes, and processes had one or more threads. And the one or more threads is such a clean conceptual model. It's hard to believe that there was, that the idea of having these threads kind of bolted onto other operating systems that didn't support it initially, and then you'd have, the differences being between threads that the kernel knew about or threads that the kernel didn't know about, and those would usually come under the heading of green threads, where the process itself manages threading, usually through timer callbacks or whatever. Those often had to be cooperative in nature because of the limitations on what a program could do versus what the operating system could do. And so Mach, this was a really clean model, and it was architected right. And pretty much every operating system since then has taken up that model. So that's worked pretty very well. And then we'll talk a little bit about libdispatch or Grand Central Dispatch a little bit later. And I think that's also a really clean model. So I don't know what's wrong with us. I mean, I know we were kind of praising Xcode 5 last episode, and here I am praising other stuff. I don't know. Maybe we have a fever or something like that. I know it's not our kind of thing to do.
Well, we'll balance it out in the next couple episodes.
Okay.
How about if I talk about something bad while you talk about this, and then we're concurrent, and then we're...
Yeah, right. Oh, that's averaged out concurrently. Very nice.
Yeah.
So Mach had this thing. So there's a few different parallel mechanisms on OS X and iOS. You have at the lowest level Mach threads, and it's the Mach thread API is there, and to my knowledge, the only person who uses it is me, which I use for Mach Inject. I guess GDB and probably LLDB use it. It's really low level. It's not that hard to use, but it's definitely
It's elite company. Is what it is.
There we go. And so it's definitely not a, I don't even, it's more of a kind of a system programming interface and an application programming interface type stuff. You know, it's there, it's in header files, it's not well documented, stuff like that. But Mach used to have, and I actually had to look this up before I went on air here, is that there used to be a package called C-Threads, which took these kind of really low-level primitives and low-level APIs and put into a higher-level kind of API. And it was, fortunately, the, you know, Google caching has fallen out on a lot of these pages that describe this stuff, so it's kind of hard to track down and figure out. But it looked like there was this header file, cthreads.h, that no longer exists in my system. So I thought that it actually would still be around, but it turns out that it's long gone, and rightfully so. So cthreads seemed like a pretty nice API, but pretty much the world has moved on, and now this is this thing called pthreads for POSIX threads. And POSIX threads are basically a standard API for programming threads across Unix-like operating systems. And I think it even goes beyond Unix-like operating systems. I think, for example, Windows has actually like a pthreads library like you can like link with or something that will basically bolt a pthreads API on top of Windows native threads model or something like that. I'm not too familiar on the details on that one. And then I mentioned about in the beginning of the episode that there was also Apple had Thread Manager, and I think it's still part of Carbon or was part of Carbon, whatever. And the Thread Manager was a really nice, very it was a nice high level API, really great to use. And that was the Thread Manager supported both cooperative and preemptive threads, and I used it to great effect. As a matter of fact, I used it so well that that ended up being the first paper I wrote for my first Mac hack back in 1997, and the paper was uninspiringly called Implementing Threaded I/O on the Mac OS, and it basically talked about how to take the Thread Manager and how to take asynchronous input-output on the traditional Mac OS and how to weave the two together to have a nice high-level threaded I input-output with a minimum of fuss. And that's what probably set me on my diabolical path ever since. I won best paper for that. And I got invited back next year, and that's Yep. So that was and it's actually funny because so this was actually my first programming conference I ever went to. I was in Illinois. I had to take the train to Michigan, and not only they had scheduled me to give actually the very first talk, so I had no idea how any of this was supposed to work. So I ended up giving my talk anyway, and it apparently was well received, and I won best paper for it. You can't shut me up ever since. Another thing that so that was back in 1997, and I end up hitting limitations of Thread Manager. It was a great system, but it could have been so much more. And so I end up developing my own threading library that I end up calling Redshed Threads. And Redshed Threads was a pretty interesting. I was going through archive.org, and I'll put a link in there to the documentation on it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is what I did. And it basically bolted in a similar way that my Mac hack paper talked about how to use threading, how to kind of bolt the Thread Manager onto callbacks, which is how asynchronous I/O works on the classic Mac OS, which is actually a superior model to what we have today, which is really weird, although KQ helps a lot with that. Anyway, the Redshed Threads, it was based on the concept of, kind of pulsing threads in the basis of handling callbacks, so that it would have a list of threads like any Thread Manager. It have things that are active and inactive, whether they're waiting on I/O or something like that. And then it would, in a callback, which could be a parameter block I/O completion routine, it could be a time manager task that executed at interrupt time. It would be able to pulse the thread, so basically smash the accelerator and then smash on the brakes later on to take a thread and execute it and then pause it when necessary. And what's interesting about this model that was based on callbacks was that, number one, that it shows kind of a unification of the two systems of threads and events. And it also allowed one thread to span both the cooperative and the preemptive models. That if you could, basically use a, have a single, it looked like a single stream of execution, but it could be cooperative or IO-based stuff, which tends to be pretty friendly, low latency type stuff. But then it could jump to the multi-processing API that would potentially even execute you on another processor. And for if you had to do, like, say, data compression, and you didn't want to block user interface. So this was kind of a unified model, and it was very interesting how to kind of integrate the two models. And it supported, you know, 68K on System 7 all the way to Mac OS 10 on PowerPC. I never did get it working on x86. That's because no one cared at that point. And I think I sold, like, 6 copies of it. But it was site licenses type stuff, so it wasn't that bad. And one of those, my claim to fame was Napster for the Mac licensed Redshift threads for their yes, when they shipped one version, I think, and then they shipped another that ended up integrating it. And apparently they really liked that. And so I got the Napster for the Mac t-shirt. I think I still have that somewhere, probably. And
pictures there, it didn't happen.
Yeah, so that was probably as close as I'll ever get to being a rock and roll star, that Redshift threads helped power Napster for the Mac. So there's a couple of good things that I want to mention about threads, and then I'll kind of go into the downsides of them. One of the cool things about threads is things called thread local variables. That typically, when you think about variables, you tend to think you have global and you have local variables, and I guess you have instance variables too, and maybe you have some static variables in there too. But static variables are basically global variables, thus with limited scope. Thread local variables give you a way to have variables that are tied to a chain of execution instead of it having to do with the scope or anything like that, or the instance, what have you. And probably the best use, well, no, I won't say the best use. I know that Gus Mueller was complaining about one bug that was really hard to chase down, I think in Brett Simmons' code, having to do with thread local variables that he was using in a kind of a skanky way to, like, I have this thing, you know, you call a method, calls a method, calls a method, calls a method, and this leaf node needs to basically somehow pass information all the way back up, like, oh, I'll just stick in this thread local variable. And I think it was Gus, maybe it was Jalgut, now that I think about it. But anyway, so you could definitely use them for evil. But the thing that I'm really satisfied with that I've used them lately for is my JR error package, which I think we've talked about on the show. And in terms of it implements a stack of NS errors that you can and use this instead of like throwing an exception. You have the stack of NS errors that's usually empty, but if you actually run into an error, you can push the NS error onto the thread stack, and then you can unwind it later on. And this allows you to you don't have to like throw exception, but all the information is there, so you can unwind later. And I even do a thing where I will actually look for unreported NS errors on the stack once you unwind, and will issue a NS log for you, pointing out that hey, there was this error that got put on the stack that no one ever eventually pulled it off. And that's some run loop goodness, which is not strictly a parallelism thing, but maybe I'm going to have to eventually weave it into our many forms of parallelism, the entire run loop mechanism. But anyway, so thread local variables unfortunately don't play 100% well with the bold new libdispatch, Grand Central Dispatch future world we're in, which I guess is not the future; it's present.
Because
the entire thing about a Grand Central Dispatch is that you have these tasks, that get bopped around on different threads.
Yeah, they're independent of what thread they're running on.
Exactly.
Which means you can't associate them with data like that.
Mm-hmm. That said, it tends not to be too bad a problem, especially if you're using the kind of way I am with that way JRR is. That said, that in macOS 10.7 and iOS 5 and later, Apple gave us a new API that allows you to set specific information onto dispatch queues. So you can kind of think of dispatch queues as the next level down from threads, in that you have a bunch of work that needs to be done that is all tied together. So the type of idea of having kind of thread local variable, you can basically have dispatch local variables that way. And so that API was not part of the original Grand Central Dispatch in 10.6. So that's something that they added in 10.7. And I remember reading the release notes on 10.7 and seeing that little tidbit. I'm like, aha, this enables a thread local variable style type stuff, even in Grand Central Dispatch. I mean, I don't know what to call this thing. It's like, it's libdispatch in the kernel, and it's like Grand Central Dispatch, which is long and hard to say, GCD, I guess maybe I'll just start calling it that. Anyway, the one of the things that slipped into OS 10.5, I guess back then Mac OS 10.5. Again, I don't know what to call any of this stuff, and this has always been around on iOS, is that inter-thread messaging. It used to be that sending messages across different threads in Objective-C was pretty hard. You basically had to treat them. I believe the standard way for dealing with that is to use distributed objects, actually, and kind of almost treat as if they're separate processes, individual threads. But things have gotten a lot nicer in 10.5, that now NS object has perform selector on thread with object, and there's like wait until done, and there's like a modes variant and stuff like that. And this uses the run loop machinery to actually, you know, it will queue up the selectors that you want executed on which object on the thread. And so the thread has to have run loop. This can't use like a bare pthread, which is something I should probably mention, is that NF threads, Cocoa threads as we know them, are based on pthreads. And those are those POSIX threads. And the very nice API that was seemed very promising, but unfortunately, I think it's in the spotlight was pulled from it a bit too soon, because then GCD came on the scene and took all the spotlight for itself, was perform selector in background with object. And this was a really convenient API that basically wrapped up in a convenient little package, say, where you could spin off work, where it would actually create a new thread for you, it would execute the selector, and then it would clean up for you all in one go. And
I don't remember that.
Yeah, perform selector in background. That's still around. All these are, I wouldn't say that they're necessarily recommended for new code. And I'll get into a little bit about how GCD affects the threading world at the end of this episode. And of course, when you talk about threads, the thing that that most people talk about and kind of tell you to stay away from is because you have to be pretty good about in terms of locking things. And so there's a bunch of locking. So the idea here is that, especially in the preemptive world, well, I guess only in the preemptive world, but that's what the world we're in, is that if you have a variable that's shared by more than one thread, it's very easy for reading writes to go astray, and you'll end up kind of stomping on each other. And you need to protect such things, these so-called critical sections, with locks or semaphores or something like that, or atomic operations, which all pretty much boil down to the same thing, that making sure that it only gets touched by one thread at a time. And so Cocoa has a bunch of APIs for this, actually too many. It has NSLock, NSRecursive lock, NSCondition, NSCondition lock. And there's also the NSLocking protocol. And NSLock is just a simple lock. So you can try the lock, you could lock it, you can see if it's locked, whatever. And if you get the lock, then you can mutate the variable, and then when you're done, you should unlock it. There's a problem there that if it turns out that if you let's say you have a high level method and you lock access to a critical variable, and then you end up calling some other methods and a few methods down, and ends up that it wants to modify that same variable. It goes to lock in. Now what's happened is that you have deadlock that you're waiting for yourself to complete. And so there's this lock called NS recursive lock that detects when a thread is trying to lock the same thing itself, and will deal with that correctly and say, oh, you are the same thread. That's totally cool, man. You just go ahead and I'll recursively lock it for you. And it does keep track of stuff so that it unwinds correctly as you unlock type stuff. And probably a contender for one of the weirdest APIs out there, not so much in use, thus in terms of how it was rolled out, is NS Condition. NS Condition, I think, holds the record for the API that's for the longest submarine. That it was actually introduced in macOS 10.0, but only documented and made publicly available in 10.5. And NS Condition is... it wraps up condition variables, and then there's NS Condition Lock that was also introduced with 10.5. And of the two, I like NS Condition Lock the best, but they're all out there and they kind of overlap, and you have to be careful in how you use them, and blah 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 blah. So it's not a great scene. Another thing you need to be very careful about with threads is thread termination. That I forget. I think POSIX went back and forth on this, but pthreads had an API that allowed... So there's an entire problem with can you kill thread? And a thread where it runs to completion and thus exits out the function that it was called to kick it off, that's not a problem. Where it's a problem is when, let's say you're downloading stuff and the user hits the cancel button. It sounds like, you just should be able to go and just terminate that thread from the user interface thread. Well, that leads all sorts of problems where it had open sockets, had open files, and what happens to those resources? And in Java, it will actually throw an exception called, I think it's like thread interrupted exception, and it gets thrown through the thread's execution, and that will help unwind some stuff. And Java in general with memory management is not a problem with Java because of the garbage collection. But of course, you still have explicitly managed resources that you need to keep track of. And because we're in the harsh land of C, we don't get such niceties of exceptions and higher level models. So it just... I believe there is a way to actually still kill threads where you just... it's kind of like a kill 9 in Unix, where killing a thread is actually not as hardcore as you might think it is. It's just, if it's executing, stop executing it, and clean up a stack and delete the thread control block. And it's the same way, it's like kill -9 just removes that process from the scheduler and cleans up all the rest. And so it's not as traumatic as you think, but because of the potential for it to have open resources, including... probably most catastrophically, open locks, where it will thread can have open locks, and then it will never release those at all. Then it's really problematic. So the standard way to deal with this is advisory locks, where you tell the thread, instead of just cutting off at the knees, you say, "Hey, you should go away now." And it's kind of mean to the thread because who wants to be mean to the thread? Tell it you don't want it around anymore. But that's how this thing goes down. And you actually will see this. I think POSIX has some thread advisory APIs specifically for detecting this type of stuff. But usually this is done at a higher level where it's like there'll be some sort of done flag in instance variable of your NS thread or something like that. Where you, once around each loop, you just check to see whether you should go away. And this is also the type of stuff you'll have to do in this type of advisory termination type stuff is something you also see in NS operation, that before you actually go to execute, you'll see, should I even execute? And this is, again, you have the same problem with that. Once you put operation in the queue, it's like, what does it mean? at that point, you're in multi-threaded land, things can proceed asynchronously, and really the best place to check to see whether the work should be done is right there, which seems like a weird place to put it, but unfortunately that's really the only place it could be put. And then I did mention exceptions a little bit, that exceptions in general are problematic. If you throw an exception in a thread and let it propagate out of the thread, what should happen? I think in C++ land, like, that will end up throwing an uncaught exception, your program will terminate. I think it depends on whether you're using a raw P thread or if you're using an S thread, whether or not that will be logged at all if you're using Objective-C exceptions, although nowadays they're implemented in terms of C++, so I don't even know that. Anyways, bad news, the bottom line on that one is that at the top of your thread entry routine, you should always have an at try and at catch in there and capture everything. And a similar thing is with auto-release bools. I know they're kind of out of fashion nowadays, but you still need them around. That if you have especially a raw P thread, but even NS threads, that you need to put auto release pool in place there. Nowadays, you get a nice logging saying, hey, there's, you know, memory's been, this object's been deallocated without an auto release pool in place. You know, it's just leaking. That's pretty easy to find, figure out what's going on. In the bad old days, I don't think we had that. I seem to remember leaking a lot before I figured stuff out. And one method that is kind of obscure, and it's actually been around since the 10.0 days, is detach drawing thread to target with object. And that is a little convenience routine that's similar to perform selector in background, that it will go through and actually create a brand new thread for you, and it will also go through the niceties of even setting up the auto-release pool for you. And so I wish I had known about that many years ago. Nowadays, it's not such an issue, But it's nice to know that such a convenient method was always there, even if I didn't know about it. I think it's the entire drawing thread thing. I thought, I'm not going to draw in a separate thread because that's going to screw up NS view. Anyway, so shared mutable state is probably one of the biggest problems in the preemptive multi-threading world. You could say it's the root of all evil, although I would say probably the Reactive Cocoa guys would say that state in general is the root of all evil. Unavoidable, but should minimize it type stuff. And I mentioned before that simple adding of numbers are unpredictable. And this is going back to, I guess it was just my episode ago that we were talking about the kind of the load store risk type instructions. That's actually pretty easy to in a preemptive world, when you think about how risk instructions work with the load store architecture, where you load an address into a register, then you increment the register, then you store it back out to memory, that thus adding thus incrementing an integer in memory is actually three operations, and or at least three instructions. And if you're lucky, that those you'll be interrupted in between those, and if you then try to increment that variable in memory again, your timeline is going to go whack, and you'll end up losing an increment, because what it'll end up doing is you'll get last write wins behavior, where the last person who had the value in memory writes it out, stomping on the memory that was just updated before. So it's a bad scene, man. So,
right, so in threads, the early bird doesn't get the worm.
There we go. Yes, I guess it's a late bird. You wanna be the last one having dinner. And so there's this threads not only get a bad rep because of the mutable state issue, and you can deal with this in many ways. I already mentioned locks, but this, like, minimizing state in general, and especially mutable state. If you have things that are immutable, that turns out that preemptive multi-threading becomes a lot less evil. And the other bad rep that threads get tend to be in terms of scalability. In particular, there's this thing, I should make sure I call it out in the show notes, C10K. There's a thing called C10K, or the idea is that what does it take to write a server that can simultaneously serve 10,000 connections? And so it was this interesting effort saying, okay, this is our problem. what can we do about it? And it was kind of open-ended, and for better or for worse, event-based kind of technology has won the day. That the idea is that that we had this pretty bad model with threading, and the idea is that like the old Apache server would actually spawn a process for every connection. And last, like, well, I guess maybe this for the CGI stuff, but definitely for the CGI stuff. And that's like creating a process and spawning a process is actually one of the most heavyweight things an operating system does. And let's see, I mean, how many processes do I currently have running here? I don't have a simple little list, and I won't bother running it, piping it through WC, but I probably have like maybe 100, 200 processes. And the processes chew up a lot of, each one has chew up a lot of resources. Each one has its own
on my system.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
On my system, I've got 118.
118. So yeah, I mean, so you're on the order of hundreds there. Mm-hmm. If you were trying to do 10,000 processes, your OS falls over. It pretty much, regardless of the kind of beefiness of your operating system, you don't want to have that many concurrent processes going. And so the model of halving a process per connection is just right out, flat out, unscalable. So but then you look at threads, you're like, oh, threads are lightweight, they're only a registered file, and they're only a stack. Like, how about if we do thread per connection? And that's what Apache does. And the problem with that is that while threads are lighter weight, they also have they're also fairly resource intensive. And there's a few reasons for this. Number one, they're is resource intensive in terms of latency, that on each preemption, having to take the entire registers and pull them and save them into memory and then reload the registers for the next task, next thread into them. Like, that's one of the worst things you can do, because that blows your pipeline, and it's pretty traumatic to the processor in terms of it being able to optimize what it's going to do next. Because remember, processors tend to read pretty far ahead in the future, have branch prediction, that type of stuff. So the caches get blown out. Yeah. So it's not a great scene. You have the kind of the latency of that. And with as you have more and more of these, often they're implemented as simple linked lists, and so you have a linear time algorithms to deal with this type of stuff. And with if you end up having 10,000 of these, thus the preemption alone will end up chewing up all your processor time. So it's not a great model. The other problem with it has to do with stack size, and that these stacks tend to, I forget what stack size is on current models. I don't think I even looked that up, but it's it used to be like half a megabyte type stuff per thread. I wouldn't be surprised if it's much larger now. And if you're going to have 10,000 of these, all of a sudden you're going to have a lot of time spaced on stacks that are mostly empty. And so, but there's this really great paper called Why Events Are a Bad Idea for High Concurrency Servers, written by Rob Van Baren, Jeremy Condit, and Eric Brewer. And their basic thrust of the paper is that, and this is where I try to redeem thread somewhat, is that their thrust is that all this is tied to bad implementations. And if you, one of the coolest things about this paper is that they reference another paper by H.C. Lauer and R.M. Needham from 1978, which I totally never heard of, called On the Duality of Operating System Structures, that it apparently makes a case where message passing systems and process-based systems are duals of each other. It's like the Turing equivalence type stuff, that actually one can be always expressed in terms of the other. And so so when we talk about like events versus threads, that's actually a false dichotomy, because they are actually duals of each other. So that's kind of mind-blowing, just in a computer science perspective. But this paper goes on and to where they say that these types of problems aren't intrinsic to threading system itself, especially since it's a dual of event-based systems, that you can achieve event-based server class performance in a threading model. And one of the reasons why, actually the reason why I wrote RedJet Threads back when, was that I was writing a Zmodem protocol. And Zmodem is a complicated protocol, and it has a ton of state. And I was trying to use the asynchronous callback-based Mac OS API for this stuff. And to keep track of all that state and all the callbacks and with all the structures, I was just pulling my hair out. And when I switched it over to a threading-based model, it got so much simpler because all that stuff could be stored on the stack. And so the anyway, back to the paper. So the two big things are, I was talking about the latency of the preemption and the significant cost therein. And they have they went to a user space model they basically wrote a server for the C10K challenge, and it was threaded. The code was simplified, and it performed even better than event-based code. And how they did that was that they used a Green Threads implementation. I wasn't altogether sure whether it was preemptive or not. I don't think it was preemptive. So if you're running calculations, you probably would need to do something like my pulsars model. But their solution was because of the lower latency of having to switch registers at arbitrary times and without having to cross kernel space boundaries, that they can handle 100,000 threads no problem. So they don't necessarily have, you know, a thread per connection. They still could potentially use a thread pool, but if for a C10K challenge, having 100,000 threads no problem, that you can do a 1-to-1 without using a naive model and still have the type of performance you want. And then the other issue was the trade-off that we see with stack space, that there's a trade-off between risking stack overflows, and I mean like the original stack overflow, not the website, and or you just waste virtual address space on having large stacks. And they point out very well that if you just make the compiler a little bit smarter, that problem goes away. And so I'm very sympathetic to this line of reasoning, and they go into a lot more detail on other things that, unfortunately, I'm running out of time, so I'll skip. But it's a great paper, especially because threads have been pretty much written off, and like saying, oh, if you need high-performance servers, you can't do threads. And I think the paper is a great rebuttal to that. And so finally, Grand Central Dispatch. I think I mentioned at the top of the program that I think it's a great architecture. Much like Mach had this really clean conceptual model where you have processes, and a process is this heap plus resources plus writes plus one or more threads. GCD, this gives you a really clean conceptual model in terms of, oh, you also have these tasks, these blocks, and I really should call them tasks and not blocks because they're not exactly tied to blocks as we know them in Objective-C. You can use them in plain old C. And it works out really well, and especially how they architected it, where the operating system knows about these tasks. And Apple's, like in 10.6, they shipped the basic implementation, and then they made it better in 10.7, where they kind of weaved it in deeper into the operating system. And then, of course, Apple has published this code, and they've kind of, and this is one of the reasons why I keep on tripping myself up, is that they kind of offer it under the system called libdispatch. And they're basically kind of offering it up for other operating systems to use as well. And I think there was some talk about FreeBSD using it, or maybe Dragonfly BSD or something like that. But to my knowledge, Mac OS X, and I guess that's OS X nowadays, and iOS are the only ones who are using it. But it's... And I'm a big fan of it. The only real downside I see is that I'm trying to remember, you know, in comparison to threads, I should say, that like the last time I had to write threaded code where it was because where I had a choice between doing something with GCD and Threads, and I chose Threads. I've had to do it a bunch of times just for interoperation with like cross-platform libraries type stuff. That's kind of a standard thing you need to do. But the only time I've had to I actually went with Threads versus Grand Central, besides GCD for design reasons, for architecture reasons, was when I had a producer-consumer kind of pipeline model where the producer was bounded and I also needed the concept of back pressure. And due to the finite resources and how queues work, it was actually really conceptually difficult for me to try to figure out a way to make that all work and end up just punting and going with a traditional thread-based producer-consumer model where I was in more control of the back pressure and I could reason about it more effectively. But that said, that was a ton more code I had to write, and it's kind of weird because I think it's because I was comfortable with the producer-consumer model with Threads that even though it was a bunch more code, it was conceptually simpler to me. And I don't know, maybe if I wasn't so familiar with Threads and producer-consumers that I would have tried to make it fit into Grand Central Dispatch somehow. But man, it's 51 minutes and I am done.
Okay. Well, a couple of things. It's interesting that I also did a paper, I believe it was from MacHack, called Weaving the Leopard's Pelt, which is simulating fibers on OS X. And it starts with the fiber is a thread-like mechanism on Windows NT and later that must be manually switched to, unlike normal threads, which sounds like cooperative multitasking, really.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure why I didn't just say that. But it was the sake of switching manually between threads on OS X using regular threads by basically sweeping the thread that I was switching from. And I needed this for a particular thing I won't get into now. And also I'm pretty sure this isn't online anywhere, and I see it's using my old email address. So if I wanted to put this online, I'd need to sort of redo it. I don't know if I'm going to get to that, but yeah, it's interesting that I was dealing with a lot of these same issues you were with the threading issues on both OS 9 and OS 10 early on. The other thing I wanted to mention real quick is the initial version of GCD that I used was a bit of a disappointment, actually, and they might have improved it since the last time I looked at it. But the promise of it was you can throw whatever you want at it, and unlike Threads, we'll handle it for you. The OS will handle it, and it will understand what pressures the OS is under, what constraints the OS is under, and it will know how much stuff to run in order to keep the OS responsive, no matter how much you throw at it.
Totally.
That was at least what I was told.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out, at least in the version that I was using, and this was a couple OS versions ago, totally not true. Totally not true. There's something called the slow path, and I don't actually know that much more about it than just that very ominous sounding name, which is that if you throw too much stuff at a queue, it will go down the slow path and everything will just slow down tremendously. Mm. So a lot of what I was told by people at Apple at the time was, oh my God, don't do that. Oh my God, don't throw everything on it because you're going to go on the slow path and you don't want that. So throttle it yourself. Throttle it yourself. Make sure that your queue is only has two potential tasks running at the same time. And so that you make sure, but what that means is in an application where you have to do that yourself, basically you are having your app use that logic, and then the OS can't expand that. If you run this on a new Mac Pro with 8 cores, it can't do anything about it because you just told it to use two tasks at the same time. And if it's an iPhone, then maybe even two tasks is too much. So I was actually quite disappointed that the reality of GCD was so far wide from the idealistic explanation that I was given from the sessions and documentation and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if that's still the case. Again, as you said, they might be getting better as they go along.
Mm-hmm.
But from everything I've heard, it is not a nirvana of handling all this stuff for you at the OS level. It just isn't. You still have to think about it. You still have to write code which is self-limited to be able to work well with it. So,
okay.
That's all.
I don't know. Yeah. I remember that similar thing with NS operation and NS operation queue. and that make it the same promises and rewriting the same things. And maybe I was just burned enough by it that I didn't trust it for GCD, and that's why I didn't get burned. But I think it's just I'm working on different types of apps that I didn't have to put a bunch of work in a queue. So maybe I would have run into it too.
Yeah, and you know, maybe it was the fact that they were just overpromising. You know, maybe no technology can really give you that kind of, well, throw anything you want at it and it will be able to handle it, because that is pretty unrealistic to demand of a system.
Yeah.
So, all right. So to see the show notes for this episode, go to edgecasesshow.com, all one word, /65, and we'll see you next time.